Wednesday, Gimel Iyar. We're continuing the women's chavis alavos shiur shav yichad amaisa. Okay, a little hakadoma to today's shiur, to really the whole learning, like an advertisement. I have an advertisement for our learning. So we're learning shiur bitachon. We learned, and now we're learning shiur yichad amaisa. So perhaps we're about to learn a very long perek about the whole machinations of the Yetzirah, but that's really sort of a segue of perek Dalet, because he started talking about the Yetzirah and how it prevents Yichud HaMaisa. But the Shaar is really focused on Yichud HaMaisa, which is, we explained at great length already, the idea of being focused, single-mindedness, devotion to Hashem, and not doing things because of the way they play in Peoria, as the saying goes. So I could see someone saying, you know, that's a wonderful mila, it's a wonderful midah, but like, is it really that important? Is it really that essential? So we said, yeah, it's like something, it's sort of like, he compares it unfavorably to Ovid Avodah Zarah, etc., etc. But I came across something which is so telling, so remarkable. I saw this, I said, this is unbelievable. I have to share this with the women. Okay. I'm probably going to pronounce the word wrong. Thank you for not laughing. A palliative nurse. Palliative?
Yeah.
Palliative?
Yes.
Okay. It's in a hospice, Dafka? I mean, the people are going to die. A palliative nurse who has spent many, many years in her job, and she counseled the dying in their last days. She wrote a book. She wrote a book, The Most Common Regrets That People Have at the End of Their Lives. The name of the book is, she wrote it first a blog. She has a blog, this lady. Apparently she's an intelligent woman. She has a blog. What's a blog? Well, she has a blog. I don't know if she's Jewish or not. What? The name of the blog is Inspiration. She writes a blog about her experiences. A blog.
Are you so impressed that they don't know what a blog is?
I am. Okay, let's start from the beginning. A computer, PC, internet, blog. Oh, whoa, I don't even know how to define. A blog is any jerk that wants to write like a newspaper column, the equivalent of a newspaper column. Any jerk that wants to write their opinions about anything in the world, right, wrong, rumor, MS, sheker, lies, lashon hara, rechilus, apikursus, you write a blog. There are, of course, tens of thousands of very Torah-dika blogs and very, well, very intelligent blogs. And there are terrible blogs out there. The blogosphere, as it's called, is a dangerous place. A very, very dangerous place, but it's a dangerous place. She writes a blog called Inspiration and Chai, which leads me to believe she might be Jewish, because where does she get the word Chai from? Inspiration and Chai. And she wrote a blog, and she developed it into a book, which I already bought, that's on my Kindle. The name of the book is The Top, you know, now it's like, you know, thanks to David Letterman. You know who David Letterman is? Okay. So The Top, yeah, you have to make a top something list. What? The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. Yeah, that's the name. She developed it into a book, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. She spent years and years and years working with dying people, and she made a list of the top 5 regrets of the dying. And what do you think? She writes of the phenomenal clarity of vision that people gain at the end of their lives, and how you can really learn from their wisdom. When questioned about any regrets they had or anything they would do differently, common themes surfaced again and again. So she wrote this blog, and then she wrote this book. The top 5, and she What do you think the first is? Unbelievable. You wouldn't think so, but this is what we're learning. The top one, this is the top one. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. That is the top regret of people. It's scary. This was the most common. I'm going to read to you from. There's like someone sent me a sikum of. This was the most common regret of all. When people realize that their life is almost over and look back clearly on it, is it easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled? They have not even honored half of their dreams because of the choices they made, because of other people. This is mamish. So I say, wow, we're learning Shar Yichud HaMaisa. This is exactly Shar Yichud HaMaisa means don't adapt other people's values, don't adapt other people's expectations of you, don't adapt. Oh, hello, how are you? Can you see me? You see, I couldn't see you. Roe ve'eno nira. I know you're like a malach. The name of the Rata. The reign of the writer. It's very good you said that because she's Australian. So, no.
What's her name?
Bronnie, B-R-O-N-N-I-E, Ware, W-A-R-E. Doesn't sound Jewish. But her blog is Inspiration and Chai, C-H-A-I. Mm-hmm. This is number one. And I said, we are learning Shari Yichud HaMaisa. Look, it's scary. Look, it's not just a side point, a good midah. This is the top regret people have when they die, is that they didn't live their own dreams. They didn't live with their own... Okay, that's... Ooh, scary.
Yeah, some people's dreams will be to climb Mount Everest.
What?
Some people's dreams will be to climb Mount Everest.
No. That's fine. But the idea... No. I'm happy you said that. I'm talking about the concept that you are true to yourself and don't live other people's what they don't live what your neighbor wants for you. Don't you shouldn't even live what your parents want for you. You know, your parents. I want certain things for my children, and horrible if they don't fit what I want for them and they go in a different direction. I mean, this happens all the time. You got to let go. So. Certainly, as religious Jews, we try, they shouldn't cross a certain line, and you don't let go if they want to become, let's say, not from, so you don't want to let go, but that also shouldn't be because it's a fulfillment of your dream, but because, you know, you see someone walking off a roof, and they're going to, so they'll say, oh, you know, let him live his dream to commit suicide. That you don't do. So if someone's becoming not from, it shouldn't be because of you. And that's probably a big yesod, but I don't want to get into that now. But that's probably a very important yesod. How to deal with kids like that, in that they think you just want to impose, you're disappointed in them, you're ashamed of what the neighbors will say, you're afraid of a shidduch for your other children, and this, you know, but you don't really care about them. And what has to come across, hopefully it has to be true, but what has to come across is that you care about them, and you only have their interests at heart, and you're not trying. Okay, so that's number one. Number two is, number one is Yichud HaMaisa. Number two is, from every male patient that she nursed, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I didn't spend so much time in my work, that I made more time for my children, for my family, for my spouse, for myself. You know, you don't spend so much time just making money. And this is Shar Bitachon, straightforward. Hashem is gozer what you're going to live, what you're going to earn. Ishtadlus is Ishtadlus. I don't want to start a whole discussion of Ishtadlus. I now have an idea of what it means, but you don't go beyond that. Don't go beyond. And that's the second top regret, is that I didn't spend so much time at work. Number three. Now, we already covered Shari Yichud HaMaisa and Shari Bitachon. Everything else is really just, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. Many people suppress their feelings in order to keep peace with others. As a result, they settled for a mediocre existence and never became who they were truly capable of becoming. Listen to this. We said this in Shara Bitachon because the Chavizalovas put so much emphasis on stress. Many developed illnesses relating to the bitterness and resentment that they carried around in that. So, of course, doesn't mean you can be Mavayish people, but the Torah is perfect. Torah Hashem Tamima. It gives you Gvulim. Yeah, you're not Mavayish someone Barabim just because you feel like it. But this is also, it has to do with Yichid HaMaisa. You don't want to, this could be not telling someone you love them, not telling someone you're angry at them. The Rambam says it's the worst thing in the world. Rambam says, that's Lo Sisna Sachicha B'Lavavecha, is to keep things bottled up inside of you and not to go over to the person and say, you know, I'm resentful that you've done kach v'kach. Why did you do kach v'kach? And as Shlomo Kalbach once said, 90% of the time, you find out it's a misunderstanding. The whole thing's a misunderstanding. Okay, number six is, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. It's also like, again, a manifestation of work. That the relationships of friendships, often they would not truly realize the full benefits of old friends till their dying weeks, and it was not always possible to track them down. Many had become so caught up in their own lives that they let golden friendships slip by over the years. There were many deep regrets about not giving friendships the time and effort that they deserve. Everyone misses their friends when they're dying. And number five is, I wish I had let myself be happier. This is a surprisingly common one. Many did not realize until the end that you can choose to be happy. And they just stayed stuck, and they developed this clarity as they were dying. They stayed stuck in the old patterns and habits, and the comfort of familiarity overflowed into their emotions as well as their physical lives. Fear of change had them pretending to others and to themselves that they were content, when deep within, they longed to laugh properly and have happiness in their lives, and they just repressed that simcha sachayim. This is really very, very, so we're learning, that's what we're learning. You really have to realize this is the best advertisement I can think of for learning Shar HaBitachon and Shar Yichud HaMaisa. That's what that teaches and trains you to do. Shar HaBitachon gets rid of stress. You do what we said it when we learned Shar HaBitachon. I wonder if you remember. To me, it was a very important sentence. Maybe it got lost. I said, ironically, you think Bitachon represses you. Bitachon is tremendously liberating. If you have Bitachon, you're liberated. You can be creative. You can try to do things. You're not afraid of failure. You'll either fail or you'll succeed. You're not afraid of looking bad. It's up to Hashem. It's not up to you. So you go ahead and you do things and you try things, and it's just wonderfully liberating. Bitachon and Yichud HaMaisa says stop. Really, the top regret. This is okay. Now we'll start learning a little. And again. Okay, you got the names. I don't have to repeat it 100 times. I'm not getting a percentage of the sales. Okay, so we're going to go to the beginning of Perek Hay now, where the whole Perek Hay is really my favorite word as a segue, sort of. How did this happen? Because he's talking about Yichud HaMaisa, and at the end of Perek Dalet, he said the three main impediments to being focused on Hashem and not being sidelined by other agendas, by other cheshbonos, is, so he said three things. And the third one was the good old Yetzer Hara. That's what he said at the end of Perek Dalet. Here are Yetzer, B'mashe Yafsid Es Yichud Levavo Ba'asoso Lelokim. And the Yetzer Hara, that's one of the tricks. In other words, even if you, and this is already in the upper echelons, so to speak, of Yichud HaMaisa, because even if you're doing good things, and we'll learn about that in Perek Hay too, that even if you're doing good things and you're being outwardly frum with the rituals of Torah Judaism, of frumkeit, but if if you're doing it for the wrong reasons. So again, we went through this already. Yes, there's shalol lishma, and we talk shalol lishma bal lishma. I mean, we've discussed that already in the first few prakim of Yichud HaMa'aseh. But you're certainly not being Oved Hashem the way you're supposed to, and therefore the Yetzer Hara sometimes gets his foothold that way. By, you know, if you say a start a frontal attack, you know, don't be frum, or don't, you know, so you'll reject that. We're going to learn now how wily the Yetzer Hara is, what a superior enemy he is, and he'll start with making you care what other people think, and he'll couch even that in terms of frumkeit. He'll say, oh, it says in Pirkei Avos, kol shiruach habrios nocheimenu, and you don't want to make a chilul Hashem, and how does it look if you don't stay along Shmona Esrei, or how does it look if you don't do this, and he's talking about frumer things. But he gets you to do it for the wrong reason. And now he has a foot in the door, and now you're doing things because you want to do them, or because you care about other people's thoughts of you, or because you have an agenda, now it's an agenda, and now it's a skip and a hop, or two skips and two hops, but it's always plenty of time, plenty of patience, very wily, very crafty, as we will learn about now in Perakeh. Perakeh is like the Musar Sefer of Chayvus Halvavus, but he does it in an extremely scientific, analytical way. He analyzes the tactics of the Yetzer Hara, and he starts off Perakeh saying his cheshbon is that if I expose the Yetzer Hara, then there's a chance you're going to go, wait a minute, that sounds awfully familiar, that thought. Maybe we learned that in Chayvus Halvavus on Wednesdays, that mahalach, that maslul of thinking. So you might, and awareness is our strength. As he says, the Yetzer Hara is relying on the fact that we sleep, that we're not aware, that we just, that we're not thinking, and we're not questioning, and we're just going through the motions. So he relies on that, and he works very well in a vacuum. So I'm going to give you, although the starts of Perakeh saying, meaning examples, as long as Perakeh is, and as many things as he talks about, he says, drop in the bucket. We've scratched the surface. And I expect you to listen to me, he says, and to extrapolate from everything I say. And again, that takes thought. It takes thought. It's not just like Bitochen is far from sitting in a class as fantastic as the class is. But it, just that hour or 45 minutes or whatever, it doesn't do it. You don't have Bitochen. You have to think. You have to think about the seven things of Perek Beis, and you have to think about all the things we learned about. And Shari Yichud HaMa'aseh, you have to think about what we learned about Shari Yichud HaMa'aseh. And you think about it, and when do you think about it? You have plenty of time to think. You're always working in the house and this, so you have time to think. Don't always listen to the MP3. Right? We read that letter from the lady that she finally started connecting to Hashem when she got rid of her thousands of shiurim on the MP3 player. That's what we read, a letter. It doesn't mean it's everyone's experience, but it's a point well taken, that you just listen and listen and listen and listen, and you never internalize it. You never think about that because you're on to the next shiur. And because you have thousands of shiurim on Kol Chai, you go into the store now, Galpaz or whatever, Masos Mordechai, you put in whatever you put in, and you can download shiurim, and there's thousands of them. It's not automatically beneficial. You end up kidding yourself, just like in the Jewish world today, we are perhaps, the frum world is frumer than ever before in history. The frum world, unfortunately, we're smaller than ever before in history. But we're a smaller percentage of the Jewish people. Although hopefully the graph's moving up, hopefully. But we're frumer, and you don't know, like, we have tefillin that the Chafetz Chaim would have killed for. I mean, our tefillin is so much better than tefillin throughout all of history. It used to melt in the sun. It was made out of the soft leather, out of dakos. Now it's gasos, tzitzis. Okay, I'm saying things that you maybe can't relate to, the way we do sukkah, you know. Everything is, and if you can't do it yourself, you go to the store and you buy it, they do it for you. Recently I became more aware than perhaps I should have been aware, but I wasn't, that burning challah is a big problem. Challah, hafreshes challah, not the challah we eat, but the challah we mafresh. And it's really, I always did it a certain way, and then my wife didn't like it anymore because I burned it on the Lomishanet. It's a problem. So, and I'm thinking, you know, they always used to have a fireplace. You just tossed it in the fire. Like, who has a fire now? You can't burn it with electricity. So what do? So it's a problem. No, so on my corner, there's like a box. You pay 5 shekel. It's like a Seamus Geniza thing. And they burn your challah for you. It's a challah collection box. Maybe someone will do it here in Ramat Beit Shemesh. You make a lot of money. You don't know. Put it up in a center area. If people trust it, you charge 5 shekel a piece. 5 shekel. Yeah, it's a business. And you know, so if you can't burn your challah, someone will do it for you. It's very. Anyway. Yeah, you have to stay, wants to see what he does. Well, no, takes it all, throws in the garbage.
So what do you do?
That's a halacha class. There's a few options. A few options, really. There's a few options. What? I could be nasty and say, well, what'd you do till now? But I won't, okay. Some people put it in aluminum foil and put it in the oven. With the cheshbon being that it's getting burnt up, but the aluminum foil is not letting it trafe up your oven. Okay, that's one way. Another way is to do what we do, if you know about truma, if you've ever taken truma from Isis or Shemitah, we just double wrap it and throw it in the garbage, which is not preferred, but we do it to truma, if you take truma from Isis, and we do it to Shemitah food, so we do it to challah too. I always used to burn it on the grate. You have to realize challah is treif. It's kadosh, but you're not allowed to eat it, so it's treif, so to speak. Non-kosher, okay, better word. Challah is not kosher to eat, and it could make your oven not kosher if you just put it in your oven. And you could. So I used to burn it on the grates, but then it would fall. And the grates always self-kasher. That was my cheshbon. The grates were always self-kashering because the flames were coming up. But then it would fall down, and then my wife said I would take a spoon or a fork and lift it up, and now I just made that fork or spoon treif. And I said, okay, let's have the special fork and spoon that we always use, and that'll be that we'll have milchus fleishos and treif. Everybody, anyway, has those three kinds of dishes in the kitchen. And I don't know, it has become an issue because we don't have fireplaces anymore. We don't have a fire burning in the kitchen, cooking our food, right? Or our ovens don't have any fire anywhere. Like, where's the fire? So, okay. So it became a problem. I don't like the oven idea, even though I see pizza stores do it. They throw it, and the mashgichim let them, the hashgachas let them. So I guess it's okay, but then. Someone recently said to me, I'm basically an amoritz in these things. I'm amoritz in a lot of things, but I try not to let anyone know. They said it doesn't hold in heat, aluminum foil. It's a conductor of heat. It's like metal. It's like conducts heat. Why do you think it holds in heat? So I don't know. Maybe if you make it thick enough, it holds in the heat, but then it's not going to get burnt. It'll get charred, maybe. I don't know what happens, but the pizza stores do it that way. And okay, let's go. Halacha class. Go to Limudei Ladi and go learn challah when they learn challah, and they'll talk about it, I assume. Anyway, so my point, yeah. So what am I saying? We really, the outward mitzvahs in the frum world is probably has more opportunities to do things with, in a mahadrin way and muhudr and la'ela la'eli. We could do things the best way, but that's where so the Yetzer Hara like gets in there and he starts us off doing it for the wrong reasons. So Chavis Halvavitz says, I am going to expose the Yetzer Hara, but everything I say is only going to be a drop in the bucket. You're going to have to extrapolate. Kadesh Yizoru Mem B'nei Yodam. Exposure. Because the Yetzer Hara never comes as the Yetzer Hara. That's what he's going to stress. He doesn't come as the Yetzer Hara. There's no devil with the tail, with the pitchfork, and the little guy on top, and, you know. He comes as a very respectable cheshbon, stay in bed a little. Yeah, I'm talking for a man now. The women don't sleep enough. But a man, shachris, you know, stay in bed. You know, you have to watch your health. You know, you don't want to injure your health. There's a story with the Chafetz Chaim that he was old already. And then his lady, I don't know how anybody knows the story. So it's probably a made-up story. Unless he told it over, because it does have a very sharp lesson. It's a good punchline. So he was old, and he get up, and the Yetzer Hara is telling him, you know, Yisrael Meir, that's how he would talk. You know, Yisrael Meir, it's time to get up. No, Yisrael Meir, stay in bed, you're old, you need your sleep, you have to build up your body, you have to watch yourself. So that's known that Chavetz Chaim would talk to the Yetzer Hara. He would actually have conversations with himself. You see, we say with himself, as we're going to learn, the Yetzer Hara is you. It's after the Chait of Adam Arishon, the Yetzer Hara is you. It's not the Yetzer Hara. Anyway, he says, the Yetzer Hara, you're older than me, and you see you were up before me. Okay. So Kadesh Yezaru Mam B'nai Adam, I'm going to expose the Yetzer Hara. V'yil Avavam Shalem Le'lokim, which is the ideal. That's what we're looking for. As he's going to start at the top, maybe I should say at the bottom, someone who starts thinking thoughts of maybe Hashem's not looking, and maybe I can get away with this, or maybe Hashem doesn't care. And worse, which we think we have no shaychus to, but as we learn it, we'll see that it's something we do have to relate to. Anyway, but then he takes it all the way up to someone that does everything perfectly and means it, you know, a little shalol lishma. So he's looking for v'yeh levavim sholem lelokim. That's the ideal. K'mo shamar achocham, yishma achocham v'yosef lekach. His point here in this sentence is the extrapolating. That's what it says in Mishlei, that I can't tell you everything. I can teach you examples, or sometimes I'm teaching you, Chavis Halevitz is saying, a principle. And from the principle, you extrapolate things that happen. If someone learns halacha, they're much better. You know, you can't cover all the cases that could possibly come up. You know, you're going to teach 60 cases, you can be sure that case number 61 is going to happen. But you learn the principles, and that's Yishma Chacham V'Yosef Lekach. V'Hu She'Omer, and this is a very, very famous sentence of the Chavis Halevitz. It's quoted in many, many places. Ben Adam Roy L'Chol Adas, please realize, Ki Asone HaGadol She'esh L'Chol B'Olam Hazeh Hu Yitzrecha. The Yetzer Hara is your biggest enemy. The enemy worse than Hitler, Yimach Shemai, worse than anyone you can think of. And you have to realize you have a negative force in your life that's totally enwrapped in your life, as the Chavis Halevitz will go on to say. It's very scary, depressing, what the Chavis Halevitz goes on to describe. He says he's out to get you. It's like a mole, you know, the mole is in a spy novel, a mole. He's inside, and he couches everything he does as if he has your best interests at heart. Sometimes it's ruchniyastika interests even, and sometimes it's kashmiyastika interests, physical interests. he says you have to be liberated, you have to be open-minded, you have to experience the world. That's a very common thing. So, but he's your enemy, and you have to think of him as your enemy. He's not a you know, a mild-mannered, interesting sidekick that gives you bad advice. He's your enemy that wants to bring you down. And the problem is, now this gets very depressing, these next few lines, and it sounds kind of hopeless, but he says, relax, don't worry, I'm going to expose him, and you're going to learn to recognize him, and then you're going to win, because ultimately the Yetzer Hara is empty. It's a negative force in the Bria. It's not real. It's ultimately Choshech. It's nothing, empty, zero. He has no values. He's saying Yiddish. He has nothing left to sell, really. So it's a question of exposure, and then. Right, the Rishonim look back and then they say, how could we not have conquered the Yetzer Hara? It's a nothing. It's a Chut HaSaira. It's nothing. What's shot in the Tzadikim? We'll see. Maybe we'll see as we learn this parak. Anyway, HaNimsach, he's interwoven. B'kochos nafshecha. And a person has Koichos HaNefesh. You know, you think you have stamina, courage and creativity and imagination, but the Yetzer Hara is nimsach, is right? It's like a woven, interwoven in all of that, and he wants you to use your creativity and your imagination and your stamina and your courage for negative things. So hanimsach b'kochos nafshecha v'ameura v'mezeg ruchacha, he's mixed in with your moods. Mezeg ruchacha is your moods. And, right, the people, you have emotions. And he knows how to manipulate your emotions. And probably the most dangerous emotion to have in this sense is probably when people are down on themselves and they're not. If someone feels fulfilled and besimcha, the Torah's job is that much harder. He'll still try. We'll learn the whole parak. He doesn't rest, he doesn't give up, and he just comes back at you day after day after day. But you have to remember also, maybe we should speak out, that's Poshet that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the ability to fight it and to be victorious over it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a fair fight. Now, maybe an indication of how hard it could be is the Gemara that says if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't help us, then we wouldn't win. So you say, well, what happened to Bechira Chafshis? So the answer is that he's talking about Bechira Chafshis, the Gemara. And it's saying, though, there is no natural way to win. And we're going to learn now. He just keeps coming at you with all different things. But if you want to win, and you make your best efforts to win, and you do what the Chavis prescribes, he is going to give you the answer key. You know, we all wanted the answer key when we went to school. The Yetzer Hara is going to say this, and he's going to, again, this is the parak. It's a very long parak, and maybe one day we'll even start it. He's going to give us the answer key. The Yetzer Hara is going to say this, and this is what you answer. I'm not saying everyone should become like the Chafetz Chaim and start talking to yourselves. It's, I mean, not such a good idea. Maybe it is a good idea, but make sure no one's listening. Make sure no one hears you. That could lead to other types of problems. But he's going to give us the answer. Oh, he's going to say that. Yeah, point out that. He's going to say this, point out that. So he's ma'ura of the mezeg ruchach. Every phrase here, by the way, could be a whole shiur in itself. Not by me, I don't have those abilities. But the Rebbe Avigdor Miller Zatzal or others could give a shiur on every phrase. Nimsach b'kochos nafshecha, mu'ura b'mezeg ruchacha, he's part of your emotions, and he manipulates your emotions. You could be feeling, you're resentful, you're angry, you're upset, you're moody, boom! He pounces because he's going to manipulate now he's going to manipulate that to get you to do certain things that you wouldn't have done ordinarily. And he's there. You don't recognize him. You say, I'm in a bad mood. I'm in a bad mood. That's why I did that. I'm in a bad mood. So that's Mu'ura b'mezeg ruchacha. He's a partner with you in using all of your gifts, as we said, all of your senses, all of your attributes, whether it's emotional attributes, social attributes, physical attributes. He's there. He's part of you. You see, maybe you don't know sodos nafshecha, but the Yetzer Hara does. He knows what you resent. He knows what buttons to push. That's what this means, L'chaira. He's your therapist. He would be a very good therapist, except he's your enemy. He's your enemy. He's not interested in giving you therapy. He's interested in bringing you down. Hamoshel, besodos nafshecha, he knows your deepest, innermost secrets. What buttons? You know, husband and wife. I mean, this happens every day. You know, just you say something a certain way, and they take it a certain way, and boom, there goes Shalom Bayis. Because it's a tone. It could be a simple, but he knows. You know, so he gets you to say things a certain way because it's going to push that person's button. How do you escape from these last two things, the emotions and it's just both on Klali, which this is not going to say, but both on Klali, and this is, a Jew has to always be in control. The mind, this is Ba'ofan Klali. A Jew has to have the mind rule the emotions. I mean, or else he can't get started. He's Moshel in your emotions. And the only Eitzah is, so he's going to tell us, again, he's going to become very, very specific. The Perek is very, very, very specific. It's like 30 things he talks about. And that, he says, is a drop in the bucket, and you have to extrapolate. But the yesod is that to develop, never to feel that you're a prisoner of your emotions. A person, Hashem gave a person the ability to overcome, and that's reflected, I say always as an example, it's reflected in halacha, right? You don't have avelus on Shabbos, or someone could have someone be nifter tragically on Yom Tov, and the Levayas first, Avelus is going to be first after Yom Tov, and you just have to control yourself. At times it's almost impossible, but there's no question that we learn in Shar HaBechina, we're in the beginning of Shar HaBechina, and we're learning about the amazing coordination or interplay between the guf and the nefesh. Sunday nights, line 15, Schaefer House. The interplay between the guf and the nefesh, but you are always, you're able to control yourself, the seichel, and the interplay between the seichel and the seichel can always win out. The seichel, Hashem made the seichel to be the moshel, and you can control. And if there'll ever be a scenario where you can't, then you taka, maybe I shouldn't say this, but adarabba, if there's ever a scenario where you taka can't, then you taka don't have to. You're potter, you're an ones. But only Hashem knows the answer to that. You don't find out, because we are very, very quick to say, I couldn't help myself. I got angry, I couldn't help myself. I lost it. You're not allowed to lose it. A Jew doesn't lose it. Mm-hmm. Right? So there are one or two cases in Shas where it's theoretical. I only mention it to calm you down and to tell you what an achrayus you have. You can control yourself. And if it would be true that you can't, then you're potter. You're an ones. You come to Shemayim, Hashem said, what'd you do? You do this, and the Malachim say, look what they did. They say, they couldn't help it. They were taka, a victim of circumstances. And really in life, sometimes where we can't accomplish, people have certain limitations, certain people have baggage. you look around and people are born into circumstances where they have baggage. So we don't know. Can they overcome all the baggage and become totally emotionally healthy? We don't know. So they have to try because no one knows. But don't worry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kael Emuna Ve'ein Ovel, this is part of our Emuna. And we believe that there is HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, and that he controls everything, and that he's aware of everything, and that he's fair. It's a very important yesod. There's nothing to worry about. If it's true that because the person was born and his parents were divorced, or his parents died, and he was brought up by a stepfather who hated him or her, and all the baggage you read about in the weekly ladies' magazines, right? The tragedy of the week club. I don't mean to make fun. These stories are true. It's just, to me, it's a little humorous that I have to come up with another tragedy every week. Can't they take a break? Like, tragedy-free Nissan should be tragedy-free and sickness-free, but then there wouldn't be a magazine to put out. It would all be advertisements. If they wouldn't write about the illness in a month club, also. It's very good, please. I know it's very good. They heighten awareness and people don't know. It's wonderful. It's just humorous to me that they have to come up with one every week. Do they have like a working team studying medical journals to come up with new diseases that no one ever heard of so that they can have it next week? I mean, when are they going to run out? I mean, it's like the Energizer Bunny. Like, they keep having... I guess there ain't soap to the diseases you could have. I'm not laughing. I mean, I am, but... you could overcome it. And if you can't, don't worry. It means Hashem wants to... Like the famous Michta Meliel that we all know, right? Bechira, right? We're all in our box. And because we don't know, there are people again whose nekudas habechira. Again, I'm talking as if I'm Hashem, talking from an objective viewpoint. The point is, in life we never know, and people in the most dire of circumstances have climbed out of it. So we don't know that the beauty of life, the trick of life. One of the mysteries of life is that we have to try our best and we can't give up. I think it's very energizing. It's very comforting that if I taka can't do it, I'm okay. I can't fail. If I try my best, I know it sounds like Norman Vincent Peale. If I try my best, I can't fail because Hashem does not demand of me that I succeed. This is like basic Jewish philosophy 101, but that's what it comes out. From the deepest philosophies comes out the simplest life lessons. Hashem just wants me to try my best. Right? We had the famous, not famous, but we had this contradiction in Shaar Bitachon that we talk about, where Chavos insists throughout the whole Shaar that Hashem will do things for you even if you don't deserve it. And then at one point he seems to make a U-turn and he says, oh, by the way, if you don't do what Hashem wants, why should he do what you want? And it's like so jarring, and it's in such a contradistinction to themes he's been talking about the whole Shaar B'Tochen. And we said that he uses a lesson to rebel, and as long as you do your best, then the other part kicks in. You don't have to deserve it. You're doing your best. Hashem knows that. Hashem sees. Hashem knows. Part of B'Tochen, if you remember in Perek Gimel, where he listed five prerequisites to Bitachon, there was one that didn't seem to really have anything to do with Bitachon. It was just a general philosophical point, but it is very, very important. And that was number two, where he said you have to know that Hashem could read your mind, and Hashem could read your subconscious, and Hashem knows what's motivating you, and Hashem knows where you're coming from, and you can't fool him. You can't fool him. That's even a song. But there ain't no fooling you, is the line. Maybe you know this one, maybe you don't. You can fool your friend and your neighbor, but there ain't no fooling you. I won't sing it to you. I have a chmanos on you. So life, it's not depressing. It shouldn't be depressing. And I apologize if I'm depressing you. It should be, adarabba, mesameach me. Hey, just have to try my best. I don't have to succeed. Wow. Thank you, Hashem. That's so wonderful. Because my energies are limited. My kokos are limited. And here's what I want to accomplish. Here's what I want to do. And I just have to be able to look at myself in the mirror and talk to Hashem and Shemona Esrei and say, I'm trying my best. Now, not as easy as it sounds. But that's all you have to do. You don't have to succeed. Success is trying your best. And that's it. So with the Yetzer Hara, who is... That's the Omek of the Gemara, really. The Gemara is trying to tell you this by such a startling statement in Maseches Kiddushin. If Hashem wouldn't help, we would never be able to overcome the Yetzer Hara. Like, what's the point in telling me that? Like, so maybe it means I should daven. That's an obvious answer. It means I always have to daven to Hashem to give me that help. I have to make sure my will is there. I imagine that's what kicks in the help, if that's what I want. And you say, Hashem, this is my real rotzon, so please help me out. But it also is, I think, it's also telling you that, and we learned this really in the Chavis HaLavs and Shara Bitachon, who said that the only area in which you have Bechira is to make the decision and to make a plan. Success, mitzvahs, he's talking about mitzvahs. I want to be mevakechole. I kept using that example in Shara Bitachon. And I get there and the person checked out an hour ago, you know, where I couldn't find a parking spot. And I had to turn around and go home. The Chavis HaLavs says, Bechira is... It's only your domain, the decision-making process, to make that decision, and this is fascinating, we talked about it at length when we learned Shara Bitachon, to make a game plan. You know, I want to get up 7 o'clock tomorrow, you know, hooray, you know, that's wonderful, but that's not really enough. You have to make, part of Bechira is making, I'm going to buy an alarm clock, I'm going to buy those new kind that fly around the room. And you can't shut it off. And you can't shut it off. And it's this annoying, annoying buzzing sound. And you can't shut it off unless you get out of bed and catch it. Right? Okay, that's what I'm going to do. That's my game plan. That's why I'm going to get up at 7 o'clock. Okay, Mr. Shem will continue next week.